In this episode of Movie Rollers, we go over some of our favourite movies of 2018 and have a chat about the Oscars. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, D as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or on the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And I guess, you know, last couple of years we've tried to do kind of a rundown of our favourite movies of the year. So this show today is really just a little bit of banter. It's not really a formal Movie Rollers, Muggies Awards type thing.
But Joe just doesn't want to be tied down. I don't want to call it my top favourite three movies because there's so many more that I love. And
because,
so let's just call it the ones we like.
Because in coming up with the top three was really, actually, is a very good year for movies.
It was a great year for movies.
It's, it's one of those things when I looked at how the year had gone in December, and I thought, well, you know, it's not a bad year, but not a great year. And then as I came to think about, you know, what would be my distilled, you know, top five or ten, it was like, oh, that's a very, I have to make some cuts, and I'm not sure I like the cuts that I'm making. So it'll be very interesting to kind of see what your top three are, because it's very hard. And I'm telling you in advance now that I'm going to give you a list by name only of also-rans movies that I think were commendable.
Me too.
But I'm not.
Yeah.
Because it was too bloody hard to pare it down. It really was. So
I agree with you. And I think let's think about this not as like, you know, the top three best movies, but I think these are I'm thinking of these as my top three favorites.
Correct.
Like if I had to go out and watch three again, these are the three I would want to rewatch again and again.
Yeah.
Let's maybe think of it that way, just to give the audience some context, because it is really difficult this year. Yeah. If I came up with a list of 12 in any other year, those would have been my top movies. But the fact that they all came in one year is incredible to me.
Yeah.
And that's what made me realize what an amazing year for movie.
It's been a great year. I mean, when I started putting down my list for the blog entry, every year I have 10. And I got to like 15. And, you know, I realized that why should I stop at the top 10? So I put the top 15. And then I have 10 more.
Oh my God.
So I have the next 10 films. So I have 25 movies and I can stand by any one of them. But I will just go from 10 to 4, and then we'll discuss the top 3.
My God, you both cheated.
Cheating, yes.
Okay, and we're also going to just have a little bit of a chat about the shambles that is the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Because I think over the course of 2018, they've made some decisions that we've at best think of as questionable. At worst, you know, tend to think of as knuckleheaded, and that's not because we are the cognoscenti, but I feel like the whole world of film and film, fans is really struggling with what the Academy is doing with their awards. So we had the whole debacle about Best Popular Movie that came and went, and.
Then it came and went again.
Then we've had the whole, you know, shenanigans regarding who's hosting this show, and that's been decided there's going to be no host. And most recently, as of today.
And then they did the thing about there were going to be, there's five songs nominated, and they said only two of the five songs would be presented at the ceremony. And then the two which got selected thankfully stood up and said, no, we're not, unless you're going to ask the other three people.
Yeah.
We're not going to let them. So then they went back, and now they're going to have all five of them sing.
And then they're trying to squeeze down the number of Oscars that they present on live TV. And so they're squeezing what they're in their judgment, three categories: makeup, cinematography,
and editing have been squeezed
from the ceremony that will be screened on live TV and pushed into commercial break. So what that means for us viewing, if you don't have a ticket to be actually there, we won't get to see those Oscars presented, which Yeah, I'm going to quote Guillermo del Toro's quote on this, which was along the lines of all of the things to try and cut from a celebration of the motion picture discipline, editing and cinematography are those things that are absolutely core to film. You know, there are many other categories that have been pulled in from other forms of art, such as theatre and so on. But cinematography and editing are at the very heart of what makes movies movies. So why to cut those? And I think I know why. I mean, I think, you know, there are people who that, you know, who don't, you know, if you listen to this podcast, you're not in this category. But if I was to ask somebody like my father, per se, about cinematography, he has no idea what that really means. You know, he understands best picture. He understands best, actor and actress. But, you know, cinematography and editing are kind of abstract things for him. But the whole thing is just
frustrating. I think they're having a proper identity crisis. Like, they are saying they're ashamed of these categories, and they're saying they're ashamed of cinematography, they're ashamed of editing. Well, these are film craft categories, and Alfonso Cuarón actually in a street said it beautifully. He said, you can make a movie without actors, you can make a movie without music, you can make a movie without many things, but the one thing you cannot make a movie without is editing.
An editor, yeah.
Or cinematography. So
that's absolutely,
you know, so my point is maybe they should find a way to educate people and make it, maybe they can do it quick, or maybe help people understand the importance of that. That's their goddamn job. They're the number one film education.
Yeah, they're the one everyone listens to.
Right.
What do you think is driving this craziness? Do you think it's about the telecast, or do you think it's about what people think of the Oscars, or we think it's a game? I mean, I do like the fact that they've come in at least a week earlier this year. Mm-hmm. So we're not, you know, in the middle of the first quarter,
right,
talking about films from 2018.
I mean, at risk of sounding political, it feels like it's populism driving this event that is celebrated amongst all of those of us that love film. And look, you know, I mean, again, I don't want to pick on my dad too much, but you know, he is representative of how many people view these types of things. But I say, you know, to hell with that. I mean, the Oscars are what taught me about cinematography, mm-hmm. right? It was not something I knew about until I started paying attention to the types of movies that were winning these. And, you know, as we've been doing Movie Wallahs, I've gained an appreciation for things like sound editing, sound mixing and editing and all of these kind of small, you know, very kind of inside baseball, you know, very crafty esoteric skills that make movies what they are. But when you understand and appreciate what these do to the movie viewing experience, you know, that's why these are important things for us to learn about. So the Academy's feels almost ashamed of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, they shouldn't be. We should be pushing for more exposure to these wonderful, wonderful work that people do.
Yeah, and they're mistaken in thinking that by deleting these categories, they'll get more viewers. No, the ones who have no interest in this are not going to, you
That's
know.
That's a great point.
They're not going to watch it anyways. You're going to actually lose the people who even care, who care about movies in the first place.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I hope they get there.
I mean, I hate to say it, not because I'm a member of the Independent Spirit Awards, but they seem to be getting it more and more right mm-hmm. as the Oscars get it more and more wrong, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really recognizing film and the art of film and the craft of film in a much more genuine way, I think, than this stupid game that gets played
mm-hmm.
By those within the Oscar Academy. Yeah. So,
oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
they
very excited
to... They should let us run the
to...
Academy.
Yes, there you go. We would never agree. The three of us can't even agree on probably our top three.
It's too much work, isn't it?
I'm excited to hear your top threes. I said to Joe earlier, I think I guessed his. Yassi's is a bit more difficult, but I think there'll be a few that might, might make their appearance.
Okay.
So, let's get started. So...
Why don't you start with yours?
Okay.
Your number three.
Sure. My number three is, you want to guess?
No.
Okay. My number three, huh?
Widows.
No, but not far. My third best movie, the one I enjoyed the most, and it was very hard for me to separate between my top three, but I think when I really think about them, BlacKkKlansman. I love this movie, directed by Spike Lee, starring, oh my God, the ever-talented John David Washington, Adam Driver, who I've kind of given a hard time in the past, Laura Harrier, Topher Grace was amazing in this. And I'm sad that Topher Grace kind of faded from everyone's front cortex. But he was great in this movie. It's difficult to play David Duke, and it's difficult to play a really bad guy in a way where not that you feel sympathy or empathy for him, but you kind of start to see where he's coming from. I just think this was a great movie, and I know during our podcast, Joe, I know the last 5 minutes really irritated you, and that kind of made a difference. Oh, that's true for you as well, Yassi. So I know for the both of you, that last 5 minutes really kind of almost reduced your scores by a point. For me, the whole movie worked from start to finish, and I'm so happy this one's being recognized.
Yeah, and there's a lot of criticism to BlacKkKlansman that Spike Lee has only taken 5% of the truth in terms of what actually transpired at that time and kind of, you know, added his own. I really don't care. Everybody does that. I mean, it's based on a true event. It doesn't have to have all the... That's artistic license.
Because otherwise that would be a documentary, right?
Correct. So,
and if I recall correctly, the movie actually plays with that by saying at the beginning, you know, some of this stuff really happened kind of thing. I mean...
So I actually think the part of the movie which just tells the story of what transpired is just aces. I didn't care for the stuff at the beginning or the end where he tries to put it in context. But be that as it may, it's very powerful filmmaking. And I think, you know, Spike Lee deserves his due. You know, he's been at this for decades now. And he continues to be quite the provocateur.
Spike Lee can be spiky. I mean, that mm-hmm. we know for sure. And I think this movie showcases his talent. I mean, it's him at the top of his game. And I haven't enjoyed a Spike Lee movie since, you know, the likes of Jungle Fever and Do the Right Thing back in the day. So, you know, I didn't care for Chirac. I think that was his
effort from a few years ago. I try and forget about that one.
And look, you know, he's got a very particular feeling, a very particular sensibility. Again, I always say a lot of the great directors, you can sense their presence in every frame of the movie, even though they may not be in it. And if they weren't credited, you would still know it was their movie. And that's very much the case with this one. But good pick.
Okay, so Yazdi, number three.
And before Yazdi gets into it, we should do our also-rans, but do you want to tack them on at the end, or are you going to do them now?
Do them at the end. Let's do top three.
Our also-rans, our non-three.
Yeah, yeah, that okay. We can do it at the end.
Okay, because I have maybe one or two on a squeak in as well.
So I have 25 on my blog and on MovieWallahs. You can have a look at them. And then I have written a few things about the top 15. But,
and your and blog is spacesinmymind.blogspot.com.
And then you can also find it at MovieWallahs.com.
Perfect.
Okay, so my number three movie is... Are you guys ready for it? It's Shoplifters.
Yay!
Oh, I haven't seen that one. Okay, good. Negligent. Okay.
Which is made by Hirokazu Koreeda. He's one of the most humanist filmmakers working right now. I think I'm so glad that this movie is getting him greater acclaim. And he specializes in taking events from the real world in Japan and looking at them from a place of empathy. Like, you may see some horrible crime, and he looks at it saying, well, how could this have come to be? And his greatest strength as a filmmaker always has been that he refuses to create any villains. You will not find any bad people in his movies. These are just people who are victims of their circumstances. And he takes the story of these people who are living together and really, like so many other movies, ask the question, what is family? What defines a family? And it's just filled with gorgeous acting. It has wonderful revelations at the back end, which even without them, it plays out so beautifully. It's got great child actors. It just fills me up. It makes me happy to be a human when I watch one of his movies. And this one is quite special.
This is stunning, Yazdi. And you and I spoke about this, I think, two episodes ago when we were covering kind of noteworthy movies mm-hmm. from 2018 that we had not given a formal review to. I'm so happy to see this in your list. It was in my top 17. Okay. it's so good. It's such a human story about things that you just look at, that you make such judgments mm-hmm. about. I mean, I think that's the beauty of this movie is that it's easy to make judgments about things that happen when they're good and bad. And this really goes much, much deeper. Beautiful. Joe, you have to watch this movie.
I intend to, yeah. I think it's been nominated as well,
it
right?
It has, for under the
Best Foreign Film.
Foreign film, yeah.
So.
And, you know, if I was, you know, handing out nominations, for me, easily one of the best acting in any category is from Sakura Ando, who plays the wife in this particular movie. She would, I guess, go in Best Supporting Actress, but she is just remarkable.
Stunning.
Just stunning. I mean, beautiful stuff. Okay, Joe, what's your number three?
So I'm going to pick one that I'm surprised to see myself choosing here at number three. And it's one that
it's Interstellar.
it would be Dunkirk, Interstellar, Dark Knight, Inception.
Memento, yes.
Unfortunately, Chris Nolan has not released a film in 2018. So I have to choose from other directors' work. It really pains me, actually, to see what I've left on the table in terms of movies that could have been on this list, but I'm choosing it primarily because I don't think it's going to be on either of your lists, and I think it's a movie that in terms of raw enjoyment I had so much fun with.
You'll be surprised.
You'll be surprised.
I'm like, drum roll.
I know what it is.
A Simple Favor.
Oh.
It's, yeah, I know, right?
I'm
surprised to find it that high up on my list, but this is the movie that came out.
It's my number 18.
Paul Feig, directed by Paul Feig,
yes,
and it stars the wonderful Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick and a couple of others. And it's a really deliciously naughty little movie that I was giddy with enjoyment from start to finish. It came with very little fanfare, mm-hmm. I think, towards the end of the year.
Unfortunately.
And disappeared. But it's so playful. It's so trickety and it's so topsy-turvy, naughty, fun.
And Blake Lively just hasn't been better. And she's been in some good movies.
It's one of the most memorable performances of 2018, as far as I'm concerned. She nailed that character so well. So I just had so much fun with that I think it would be a shame for it to not be a mention in any of our lists, and that's kind of why I'm bringing it up. It does create me enormous pain to tell you what got pushed into fourth and fifth because of that, but I'll talk about those later. But
good choice.
Really, really, great really choice. Fun yeah. little movie. And again, I often judge my favorite films of the year by, you know, those that I'm, you know, ordering the Blu-ray for, and this is one of them. This movie just was a blast.
And I think people always might accuse us of coming up with artsy-fartsy titles. But I really like, you know, like A Simple Favor. Everybody should watch. It's just good, fun, dark, black, kind of clever filmmaking. No?
I think it's a really good choice. It's a really good choice. It didn't make an appearance in my top 18. But now you say it, there's nothing not to like about it.
Yeah.
And it's funny and it's current and it almost plays with this whole YouTube mm-hmm. phenomenon that's going on.
It's just so well crafted. And
it's
about
parenthood.
It's funny.
What's expected
it's tense.
Of us.
It's got everything in there that I think.
And I love me some Anna Kendrick.
And she's a delight in this as well.
Anna Kendrick is great in this.
She's playing a little bit more of a traditional Anna Kendrick type role than let's say Blake Lively is in this. But both of them were
a perfect yin and yang.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think if the movie had come later in the year, it may have garnered a little bit more of an awards appearance. But again, just I had so much fun. So.
And Paul Feig has always done so well with picking his female leads. I mean, he's worked with Melissa McCarthy a lot, but you know, I think it took some gumption.
Kristen Wiig.
Or Kristen, yeah.
Yeah, he directed Bridesmaids, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But it took some gumption to pick these two rather, you know, they're not like A-list actors, both of them. But yeah, he picked them, and the movie's great.
Brilliant choice. Yeah. Really good. Okay, so number two, I struggled with the placement of number two and number one. And it's like choosing between your favorite children or your favorite cats. Not possible. Or your husbands. I don't know.
You should only have one of those at a time. Wait a minute.
Just checking you're listening. Okay. Okay, so my number two is the wonderful, dark, wonderfully creative Armando Iannucci's The Death of Stalin. It came out at the beginning of 2018, and it just has not left my head or my heart since then. And I was actually on a plane journey a while ago, and I watched it again just to make sure that... Did I just remember it differently? Did I just remember it fondly than it was? And I watched it, and I laughed even more, and I was scared even more. And I got new things from it that I didn't pick up the first time. It's so clever. It's so dark. It's so smart. It's so relevant. It's such a great movie, and I wish that it had garnered more praise than it got. I think it may have been timing.
I think it did well at the BAFTAs the year before, because and I'll check on that, because okay. I think it did. It was released a little earlier in the UK than it was here.
Maybe. So, you know, again, great acting by a fantastic cast that includes Steve Buscemi, Jeffrey Tambor, Simon Russell Beale is, oh my God, so scary, so good. Paddy Considine, Rupert Friend, Jason Isaacs.
Jason Isaacs is very good in this.
Jason Isaacs just took my breath away. I mean, every single one of them. I couldn't single out one performance here because they were all so good.
And the one who played his daughter, she was so good too.
Yeah, she was good as well. Yeah. So yeah. Death of Stalin, definitely my number two. And I struggled between this and my number one in order of preference. But this was so good.
And it did pick up a BAFTA for, well, I guess BAFTA Awards Scotland of 2018. It was nominated for Best Screenplay and Outstanding British Film of the Year in 2018.
Yeah, I would say the writing is terrific. All of Armando Iannucci's movies are so wittily written.
So good.
But I think it's also very prescient in terms of what's going on politically now. It's so relevant. So very relevant.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's smart, right, to take Russian politics and be able to transpose them onto any country at the moment. I mean, this kind of struggle for power and, you know.
Speaking of Russia.
What people
anyway,
will do. Yes. Yeah.
No, this is a movie I admired. I didn't particularly love because I thought it was being too clever for its clogs. But, you know, I can see why you liked it so much. And Rashmi, you're very, very fond of political satire.
Yes.
If that was a...
It was a genre.
Kind of a genre for, you know, Oscar categories. This is something that you would be all over, so...
Yeah.
Okay. Yazdi?
My number two pick, I think, is a movie that is universally beloved. It came on early in the year, and at the end of the day, I just did not have as much fun for any other movie compared to this one in the whole year, and that movie is A Quiet Place.
Yes.
And... I think a measure of a good movie is one where after you watched it, you wonder, why the hell didn't anybody make this movie before? I mean, the premise is so clever that you come out and it seems like the most obvious thing to do. And I don't normally like it. It's only part of it is, I think, in the horror genre, but it just kept me at the seat of my pants. The movie was always ahead of me. It's smart. And there have been a few other movies which have kind of tried to do this even this year. And you just need to watch A Quiet Place and realize how tight everything is, how beautifully acted it is. Who knew that John Krasinski had it in him to make such a, you know, breathless little thriller? I just had, as far as visceral fun at the movies go, nothing topped A Quiet Place for me.
And I remember, and you can probably go back to the podcast where we reviewed it, we watched it in a full theater screening, and it was literally pin drop silence. And I think there was a bang or something, and we all jumped. Someone screamed, I think, during one of the bits. But it was pin drop silence. That never happens. This really had everyone's 100% attention.
And this is... okay, so I'll get straight to it. as painful as it is, this one ended up not being my number one, but my number two movie of the year.
Okay.
Yours as well.
So, Yazdi, that is amazing that we're a lot so aligned on a movie like that, which is, I think, more my flavor than yours. I mean, yeah. If I was to guess at, you know, at your
because you don't want horrors, right?
I don't, but, and this is, yeah, this just...
Yeah, so for me, I think the movie is just... It's just beautifully crafted. It can only be a film, right? This isn't a movie that would, you know, when there's so many questions that are left unanswered that in this type of tight little universe, you know, you often find yourselves coming away scratching your head and saying, well, but what about, and how did this, and what happened then? And you know, because this movie just gives you an experience of spending a short period of time with this family in this horrific situation. And you don't care because the movie just has, like you say, a very airtight, almost hermetically sealed little universe. And when you enter it, you are with them for the next hour and a half. And I've never seen a movie have quite the effect that this one had on the audience. I mean, the first 20 minutes of the movie, if I recall correctly, are conducted in almost
complete silence.
And not one of us, there was no chatting, there was no shuffling around, no rustling, no people, you know, futzing with popcorn. But I mean, we were all absolutely still in our seats, mesmerized by the work that was being presented. So Krasinski, you know, well done for directing. Also, his wife, Emily Blunt, was a big, big part of this movie for me. She had a real heavy load to carry from, you know, an acting perspective. And she sold me on every moment of it. There are some iconic moments in the movie that are almost entirely played through her eyes. And you know, again, for actors to have to do that without the use of, you know, screenplay and writing and voice and dialogue is remarkable. So I loved every moment of that. Great choice.
I was wondering, you know, it's interesting to me, Yazdi, where you're not the horror lover amongst us. In fact, you're the one who kind of runs away from it, why it resonated with you. And I wonder if it's because I really love this movie too, and it made my top 17 or 18. I think it's because at its core, it's really about a family struggling to survive versus the horror that they're facing. And that really came across in how tenderly it's directed. And seeing the world through John Krasinski's eyes as a father and trying to protect his family. I think that, to me, comes across more than the gimmick of The Quiet Place, which is why I think it does so well.
I mean, my only, you know... It's a movie that I immediately went home and purchased on Blu-ray. Again, this is a measure of a movie's impact on me, is whether or not I buy the thing. I can't bring myself to watch it again because I need to create some distance between when I originally watched it. Because the experience of watching it is, it's kind of like one of those life moments, right? You savor the experience, and you know that you can't have that experience too soon again afterwards, because so much of the movie's power is in not quite knowing what's around the corner. So I do have to create some distance between myself and the movie before seeing it again. But as I said in our podcast, I'm very, very envious of those people that have not yet seen this movie, because they will get to experience it the way that we experienced it for the first time. And I don't think that that's something easily repeated. So
yeah,
I loved it.
And the two child actors in the movie, Millicent Simmons and Noah Jupe. It's really difficult to work with child actors, and they're so good. And, you know, not to spoil anything, but easily one of the best endings of any movie this year.
Yeah,
so.
And definitely. The deaf child in the movie was actually deaf in real life.
Yeah.
So Krasinski insisted on using a real deaf actor.
And she's a great actor.
Yeah, she was in Wanderlust last year. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
Okay.
Number ones.
Very predictable. If you've been listening to shows from about October onwards, I think I've mentioned it in every single show. My top slot, my favorite movie is The Favourite. Yorgos Lanthimos knocks this out of the park. Again, listeners of Movie Wallows will know that Yazdi and I are great sycophants, would you call us now by now? Great fans of Yorgos Lanthimos. And I'm so happy that all three leads, and I'll call them leads because they're all amazing, have been recognized and acknowledged in award show after award show. I'm ever hopeful that Olivia Colman wins Best Actress. This is just a terrific movie on so many fronts. I think it's... I think, you know, I love that it's got three powerful women, but even if it was three powerful men in this story, just this whole sort of stakes game that people play, it talks about human nature, it talks about power, it talks about wealth, it talks about class, it talks about games that people play and manipulations, and costume is beautiful, and just, I know it's a little gimmicky at times. It's very Yorgos Lanthimos, not as Yorgos Lanthimos as he has been in the past. I just love this movie. Best movie of the year.
Yeah, it's my number one too.
okay.
So the favorite.
Guess what? I mean, it's not mine.
So I think Lanthimos' biggest issue so far has been himself, is that he loves to make you squirm in your seat. He really does. He wants you to feel as uncomfortable and as clammy as possible. And he creates movies and situations which make you really uncomfortable. And I think when he writes his own stories, that gets the better of him, which make for very interesting, disquieting movies, which has been his filmography up to now. But I think with this particular movie, he has the advantage of two things. One is he's working on somebody else's material, so he cannot throw in his
too many Lanthimosisms.
Yeah, you know, just how cruel he is with his characters. Right. You know, he cannot do that because this is based on somebody else's story. And then the second thing is now he has enough of a name that he can call the big name actors. So, you know, he has Emma Stone here and he has Rachel Weisz. Although Rachel Weisz was also in The Lobster. So I think with a larger budget, with more big name actors, with somebody else's script, he himself is a little bit reined in because I think he needs to deliver a product. And that works towards his betterment. Although I will defend all of his previous movies as well. This really is a great little package. And I love that what he does is he's throwing battery acid at the, you know, British
aristocracy.
I mean, you know, the whole British period film genre, you know, all those old Merchant Ivory movies. He's saying, I'm going to take that and I'm going to F it up. And, you know, he has anachronistic music. He has
the dancing.
The dances, the costumes are kind of out of place. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because it's all about... this all about Eve craft kind of thing. These two women who will do anything. And I love that neither of those three characters are whimpering, you know, sweet daisies. They're all gutsy. They're all passionate. They're all willing to do whatever it takes to get higher. And they're complicated. And that makes them completely human. And I just loved it. I watched the whole movie agape and in a sense of like being in a candy shop.
I've watched it three times now. I just love it. Yeah.
It pains me to admit that this, everything that you've said is entirely true about this movie. And
don't be so pained, Joe.
Well, you know, as I've said on many a previous podcast, I'm not a particular fan of this director and the way that he goes about his filmmaking. Not to say that it isn't without talent. He has talent to spare, but like you say, Yazdi, he pushes buttons. And for me, they're the wrong ones. So I actually feel like this movie would have been improved without some of the Lanthimosisms. You know, I didn't
the
care for
running,
the dance.
The duck race.
the very odd, little visual metaphors that he throws in all over the place were distracting to me from what was otherwise an immaculately crafted movie with three of the best female performances, not just of the year, but of the decade.
Correct.
I mean,
you're right.
You know, really, if there was a best actress category for, you know, the 2010s, I don't know of many performances that would squeeze any one of these three leads, out of that choice. So what he's done here is remarkable. And, you know, again, I completely understand both of your choices to put it at the top of your list. So even though it wasn't in my top three.
So what was your number one, Joe?
Oh.
So
it was.
I'm actually very surprised that this one outdid A Quiet Place for me.
Spider-Man.
Because it came very late in the year for me. And it's a movie that maybe benefits a little bit in my mind share by virtue of the fact that, you know, it hasn't been long since I've seen it. But since I watched it, it hasn't left me. And that movie is Roma.
Yes.
Yay! It's my number four. My number four. It's four,
my
four,
number four, five.
Four. So this is Alfonso Cuarón's essentially, you know, period piece about, you know, life in Mexico in the 1970s. It's a very personal movie. He shot and directed it in the actual neighborhood of Roma, which is a district of Mexico City, at the time that he was growing up, on the street where he grew up. The house that they use in the movie is not the house in which he lived, but it's directly across the street. So it's a very, very personal movie. And it's a very interesting, it's had a very interesting effect on me because I watched it in the home environment. I did not get the benefit to watch this in the movie theater. And honestly, for about half of the movie, I couldn't understand what the fuss about Roma was. So Roma has appeared on many lists. It's come out with great fanfare. People have heard about it. It's been very heavily promoted. It didn't have an official big release in theaters because it is a Netflix original, but then something strange happened.
Although it did get released, but not,
it did get
not,
a very small release, small yeah, release, yeah, yeah. But halfway through the movie, something strange happened. I emotionally connected with the movie in a way that I can't recall having done in a very long time. I found myself caring about the plight of its characters and their world and their predicament in a way that, towards the end of the movie, I was really, really emotionally invested in their fate. And, you know, the movie has an emotional peak. It has two of them, in my opinion. But they do not leave you easily. Like when the camera fades to black and the credits roll, I found myself really, really in a very odd place, where it took me about a couple of days before I could even think about the movie without wanting to feel emotional in some ways, and that's remarkable. I think it's beautifully shot. I think he's up for a cinematography award for this. It's all in black and white, which again I can find kind of gimmicky, but it feels so organic here. It's got this kind of wonderful silvery texture to it. It's not black and white in the sense of monochrome. It's got this depth of it feels very sharp, very real, but very, very you know, the sense of place. And the performances are absolutely flawless. So,
and recognized both for best supporting actress and best actress.
So the movie doesn't set a foot wrong.
Yeah.
I don't think it's for everyone, and I've spoken to a couple of folks that have had a hard time with it, understanding what's all this fuss about. But at the same time, you know, I would say to those folks, just give it another shot, because if you take the time to let this movie do its thing, it will impact you in a way. So again, I think both of you enjoyed the movie as well.
Yeah, I think two episodes ago we both raved about it, and I guess Joe, at that point you haven't seen it, so you couldn't
comment
on it. But I'm glad that you did get to see it, and I think it's something everyone should watch, for all the reasons that you've stated and we've stated previously.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about this for hours. I mean, I think the one big, you know, the Academy has been really fumbling all year. I think the one true surprise this year was, you know, the best supporting actress, Marina de Tavere, picked up, you know, she was in nobody's radar, and she picked up a best supporting actress nomination for Roma, which just goes to show how much love there is for this movie. I'm going to go on record and say that this particular Oscars are going to break all kinds of history. I mean, they're going to break all kinds of records. I think Roma's going to win best movie.
I think so too. And I tell you why, because I think it's shocking to me that someone like Joe would put this as their number one movie. And so I think that's going to be the case.
Across, yeah.
Case for most, maybe, right, people.
But it'll be the first time that a Mexican movie wins best film.
It's a foreign
and it'll
language.
Be the first time that any foreign language movie wins. So, and I think I frankly don't. I mean, we've had people who write about movies who have said that they were bored while watching this movie, and that, you know, they didn't stay with it. And I think, I don't know, unless the movie is offensive or just, you know, bad in craft or whatever, you owe yourself to keep watching the movie. And I think if people just stay through the movie, they'll be deeply moved by it. So I don't understand people who were bored by this. It was such an immersive experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was transported to that place.
Yeah.
And it kind of, even though it was nowhere near my own childhood, I could see so many parallelisms. And the other thing I've heard people complain about, Roma, I'm sorry to harp on this, but a lot of people say, well, whose perspective is the movie from? It's not really clear for me, you know, how to watch this movie. Am I supposed to watch it from the perspective of the girl? Because there's so many other things happening which she wouldn't possibly know about. I think the movie's from the perspective of the kids because that's Cuarón himself. It's based on his own life. But at the end of the day, I don't care whose perspective it is. It all fits for me.
Correct.
And if it doesn't fit for you, I'm sorry, I can't
correct.
Help you.
Yeah. I agree.
And it's interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. And you're right. I mean, it doesn't matter. In fact, the movie's emotional impact isn't because of one character's journey. I mean, right. You know, there isn't the, you know, Joseph Campbell style hero's journey to be had here, right? I mean, I guess you could, if you want to really get into it, you could probably find that thread if you wanted. But it's not about anything in particular, and it's about everything.
Yeah, and a lot of people also say, well, you don't really find out anything about her. Where did she come from? Who are her parents? Where does she live? Who's her family? I'm like, but it doesn't matter. You cannot ask that from every character in every movie.
Correct.
So, anyway, that would have been a different film, I think.
And yet we still, at least my own experience, I think, is so profound based on what I ended up feeling about these characters. And I can't quite pick out exactly how Cuarón waved his magic wand to get me to do that, because there's nothing in the dialogue that does that for me. There's nothing visually that does me. It's just all of the above.
I think it's a feeling. I mean, we've said this a number of times before. I think you just walk away having felt like you've been on vacation and you've...
But how does one direct a feeling?
You've actually... It's the first time. It's almost like being a fly on the wall. It's a true... It does that rare thing of really making you feel like a fly on the wall as you're observing this life that another time and place. It's like a time machine.
I think you don't make the movie for anybody else. You make it for yourself.
Correct.
Yeah.
And if you've done it well, if you've reproduced your experience well, hopefully it'll be universal.
We'll all get it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's our top threes. So honorable mentions.
Yes.
That haven't been mentioned. Do you want to go in twos? And another two on my list would be blah and blah. Do you want to do it that way?
And
we'll be quick about it. We won't discuss.
I was going to say we'll.
We can make noises about them though, right?
We'll stick the titles. Yeah.
Okay, and only if the others haven't mentioned them, and we'll see who's got the most left.
Okay.
Okay, so Joe, you start.
For me, two other movies. One that pains me extraordinarily. That's the one that I think A Simple Favor squeezed out of the top three spot, and that is Leave No Trace.
Okay. Also on my list. And another one?
Following that, I would say probably Eighth Grade.
Yep. Great movie. Yazdi.
I cheated on my blog and I put three movies together which are all about the outside experience, and that's Leave No Trace, Lean on Pete, and The Rider.
Oh.
All three are excellent. I think they're all about people on the fringes of society who are struggling, and they're all about empathizing with them.
Yeah, Lean on Pete and The Rider would have... The Rider is actually on my list, and Lean on Pete would have been if I hadn't forgotten about it.
Yes.
Agree. Two on my list. Vice. I loved Vice with Christian Bale. very playful and scary both at the same time, which is difficult to do, and this director seems to get very right.
Yes.
And another one, If Beale Street Could Talk. Beautiful,
yes.
Ethereal love story, which is more than just a love story. But if there was a story about love, this would be it.
Yes. Also on my list.
Joe.
Next on my list would be Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, an animated movie, ostensibly a movie for kids, which is a really horrible way of describing this movie. I'm going to get into talking about it, which I said I wouldn't do. So Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Also nominated.
The next one on my list.
Definitely going to win.
Yes, hopefully.
Will be Won't You Be My Neighbor? Which is a documentary about Mr. Rogers. It's got a very big place in my heart.
Shamefully not nominated for best documentary.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll talk about Oscar snubs, but that's definitely a snub in my mind. Yeah. Okay, Yazdi, two more.
My number six was this Hindi movie called Badai Ho, or Congratulations. Everything about this movie is just lovely. It's so witty. It's so smart. I watched the whole movie with a giant smile on my face. It talks to families without ever looking down on it. It has new things to say. It's just beautiful. Indian movies is about, pretty much they're all about families. And to have something new to say about them, it's quite remarkable. And the other movie, sorry, we weren't supposed to talk about it. The other one, my number seven on the list is Widows.
It's impossible not to. It's actually a very difficult rule that I apply for you both. Okay, two more on my list then. Caper Nom, which we talked about two podcasts ago. And Three Identical Strangers, the documentary that came out from CNN Movies.
Also criminally not nominated. Yes. But we'll talk about that. Yes.
Okay. Next on my list would be Free Solo, the amazing documentary about Alex Honnold.
Which you actually watched at Toronto.
I did. I saw it at Toronto Film Festival,
With him in attendance.
With him in attendance, which didn't make the movie any less frightening, even though the fact that the person whose life was about to end at any point on screen was sat right in front of me.
That movie is still playing right now. It's done remarkably
Worth seeing on the big screen, I think.
It's been in the theater for like 6 months now. It's incredible. That's great.
It's amazing. For a documentary in particular. Yeah. Documentaries do horribly well in the box
office. Yazdi, two more.
Sorry.
Just one. No soup for you.
Yeah. Please, sir, may we have some more?
I find it remarkable that I'm putting this anywhere near my list, given that the rest of the movies in the series have not resonated with me in this way. Mission Impossible Fallout.
Yes.
Interesting.
A brilliant, brilliant action movie. I'm not a fan of Tom Cruise. I'm not a fan of this franchise as a whole, but this movie was stunning.
Yes. My two movies are off left field, but both so good. The first one is Sorry to Bother You.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one is The Sisters Brothers.
Yes.
I think both of them deserve more credit. They're both a lot of fun.
And to follow up Yazdi's The Sisters Brothers in the same vein, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yes, yes.
Which was great this year. And then I will also give 22 July a huge...
22 July is my number 14.
Okay,
yes.
Shout.
And then I'm down to the last two on my list, is Hotel Mumbai, which I'm pleased to see is going to get a release in 2019.
No, yes, it's getting a release March. Okay.
So that's a movie that we saw at Toronto Film Festival, starring Dev Patel, about the
Jason Isaacs,
about the terrorist incidents at the
2008
the hotel Taj Mahal Hotel.
Yes.
Taj Mahal Hotel. Yeah. Remarkable movie. And then the final movie, I guess, that none of you have mentioned yet, but found a little place in my heart. For 2018 was Paddington 2.
Yes.
Again, very bubblegum commercial, beautiful little movie. Oh, it was on your list?
Yes,
terrific.
It's
okay.
17.
Didn't make my list.
Yeah, worked. It worked. When a movie makes you smile, it makes you smile.
And it's hard for a movie to make you smile.
It's true. How many left on your list, Yazdi?
I'll just tell them all. My next two is Tully, the movie I really liked, and then Disobedience, this movie with the two Rachels, which I think is so good, underrated. We talked about If Beale Street Could Talk, and then the only other two I have in my top 15 are a movie called Museum, which is a Mexican language movie with Gael Garcia Bernal, so good, and First Man, which I know not everybody likes. But
I haven't seen that, but I've heard, you know, Damien Chazelle.
Damien Chazelle's really good movie.
Okay, and I'll give you my last three. So I can't believe, Yasti, you didn't mention First Reformed.
Oh, yeah, I didn't, yes.
Okay,
yes.
So First Reformed, which we've already spoken about, Ethan Hawke. And I think he was snubbed. And then these two movies, I kind of think of them like a cute little couple, a little package, which is Hotel Artemis
and Bad Times
at the El Royale, which were just amazing, different.
Visionary.
Visually stimulating movies for me.
And nowhere near my list.
And nowhere near, Joe's list. So there you have a huge list. Just, I think going through those should give anyone who's listening a huge amount of homework if you haven't seen any of them. I'm sure there are still movies that we haven't mentioned.
Green Book was something that should have been somewhere among the three of us, if not me. And I think, again, I think I would have put that on there had I thought about it. So,
I have a really soft spot for Crazy Rich Asians, you know, for what it did.
Yeah.
And then I really like Juliet Naked.
Remember? Yeah, that was good.
And Puzzle. Those were both movies about women kind of finding themselves.
Puzzle was very good, actually. Yeah. So that's an amazing list of movies. So we now quickly are going to talk about, quickly...
Any thoughts on the Oscars? So, I mean, you know, right now we have Best Picture nominations for Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favourite, Green Book, Roma, A Star Is Born, and Vice. Did the Academy get it right?
Look, I think they got some of it right. I think many of ours are on the list here. I think I'm going to say it. I don't think Black Panther belongs here. I think it's here for the wrong reason. And I think I'm shocked that Bohemian Rhapsody made it on the list. We spoke about this during the podcast of Bohemian Rhapsody, that we would be very shocked if it made an appearance, but we also recognized Rami Malek as an amazing performance. So those two are kind of, I'm disappointed they're there. And A Star Is Born, I just don't get it. I don't understand why A Star Is Born is there.
Yeah.
The others I can stand behind.
I think the only one which really doesn't belong here, and by a wide margin, is Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, it's objectively a bad film. It's a very popular film. It's very well liked.
Crowd-pleaser.
I think people conflate their nostalgia for Queen with the quality of the movie.
Yeah.
I will grant the last 20 minutes is pure gold, but the rest of it is just like VH1 behind the music. So Bohemian Rhapsody doesn't belong there. Although, like, I think Rami Malek is going to get Best Actor. I really do, unfortunately. But, you know, be that as it may. And then Vice, I kind of like. I mean, I have nothing against it, but I don't think it's the best movie of the year. But I can live with it.
Joe?
No, I think everything that you've all just said, I think everything else feels kind of good there. I'm really heartbroken that Leave No Trace did not make it onto that list. And A Quiet Place as well. I think, you know, those movies were so excellent, expertly crafted that... You know, when we've got space for 10, you know, why isn't one of them there? You know, again, I don't understand the mechanics of how it gets onto a list there. But Bohemian Rhapsody is the biggest problem for me as well. It's a crowd pleaser of a movie, but it doesn't advance the arts, and I feel that that's what the Oscars should be about.
Okay, so anything in actor in a leading role?
Me? Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with Viggo Mortensen. I'm okay with Rami Malek. I'm okay with Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper surprisingly didn't get a Best Director nomination, so I think he should get the sympathy vote for that, for the actor. Christian Bale is, you know, completely dissolves into that character advice, so I won't begrudge him that. I would have personally swapped out Willem Dafoe for At Eternity's Gate for Ethan Hawke. In First Reformed, mostly because Ethan Hawke has had such a good year. He was in First Reformed. He directed a movie which was really good, and then he was also in the one we talked about just now, Juliet Naked. So he's been having a really good year, and I think, you know, we should recognize him. But
I mean, my only comment really on this category is it doesn't feel like it's been a great year for male performances. I think, you know, we have some, you know, notable performances here, but I don't feel like any of them, will kind of stand out to me. And I agree with you. I think Rami Malek is kind of a shoo-in for Bohemian Rhapsody, in part because he's doing a terrific impression of somebody
exactly.
that we know. So, you know, is it great acting? You know, I'll leave that for others to debate. But, you know, I think for me, the measure of greatness, it will come in, you know, whether or not Rami Malek gets subsequent nominations, because, you know, that's yet to be determined for him. But he was a great Freddie Mercury, what can I say? Mm-hmm. Rashmi, any thoughts on that?
No, I'm with Yazdi on the Ethan Hawke, which we've already mentioned.
And then I guess if we talk about actresses, you know, we have to say that that's a pretty tight category this year.
Mm-hmm. That's a difficult group. I would only say, again, because of my whole I don't understand the Star is Born phenomenon, I don't understand why Lady Gaga is here, because to me, she's playing herself. I mean, she says she's not, but I think that's because she's acting badly.
And, you know, this movie is quite divisive. I mean, it's a fine enough movie, but it's very divisive. I mean, some people really love it, and some people are like, meh, I'm more on the meh side. But, you know, I could never, ever, while watching the movie, shake off the feeling that I'm watching Lady Gaga.
Right.
Ever. So, right. I mean, and maybe am I faulting her unfairly for that? Perhaps. But I think you should be able to, you know, become transparent and kind of become someone else, and she couldn't, and she was too close to herself.
So I was going to say.
So, you know, either she's a great actor, and we've seen it now, or she's just playing herself, and she was, you know, directed well. So, yeah, she doesn't belong there just yet, for me, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, go ahead.
All I was going to say is, you know, her star, her personal star is too bright for this role, and in some ways, mm-hmm. it came off as insincere in the early parts of the movie before she gets famous as a character in the movie, and then the rest of the movie was, you know, Gaga behind the scenes on tour kind of thing.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
I think this has been an amazing year for female performances, and I think there are three big ones missing. One is Carey Mulligan in Wildlife, which wasn't a great movie, but I think
so good,
her performance was stunning in that movie. Elsie Fisher for Eighth Grade, I think, is a miss. And then Thomasin McKenzie for Leave No Trace. Those are the three big omissions. And then, of course, Emily Blunt in Leave No Trace, I think, is also a miss here.
In a quiet place.
I would also add Charlize Theron in Tully, although that's not a popular opinion. I thought she was very good in it.
She was very good.
Yeah. I think probably... And Glenn Close was pretty good in The Wife. You know, the movie itself, whatever issues you might have with it, I thought she had, you know, and she's been this, if she doesn't win this, she's going to become the most nominated person who has never won.
I think she was in the acting great. Look, I right? think she was great in The Wife.
Right.
I just don't think it's her best performance. I think it will be a time thing here. If she gets it, it will be a nod to a body of work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, Olivia Colman... Yeah. Obviously, is a favorite for the favorite. Melissa McCarthy was really good, as Can You Ever Forgive Me? And of course, you know, Yalitza
Aparicio
is amazing in Roma. So poor Glenn Close. This is a hard year to be nominated.
Her biggest problem is Olivia Colman here. I think performance has been universally recognized, and she's picked up just about every other award on the road to the Oscars. So I think,
and we've talked about it. I mean, there's scenes in the movie where she is just by virtue of her face, she's implying that that person has had a stroke, and it never gets talked about. And it's just her, it's incredible.
Yeah,
anyway,
supporting actor.
Let's see, we have Adam Driver, we have Mahershala Ali. I thought Mahershala Ali just won like 2 years ago, Best Supporting Actor for...
Moonlight.
Yeah.
I don't think he's as strong here. I mean...
I think it's the nature of the role.
Yeah.
Right, a black gay man is...
Yeah.
It's newsworthy.
Yeah, I personally was not that enthralled by Sam Elliott in A Star is Born. He's a great actor. He's been around for a long, long time, but he was just like, he was mumbling.
7 minutes, maybe, on screen.
So anyway, for me, I don't know who I would pick. I would probably pick Adam Driver or Richard E. Grant. But I have no problems here with this list.
I hated Richard E. Grant in Can You Ever Forgive Me? Because I just felt like it was such a caricature. Yeah. And it's the same reason why when we get onto the best acting nomination, I'll hold my breath. But I don't like caricatures. So for me, I think Sam Rockwell did George W. so well in Vice, I wouldn't begrudge him getting it. And same with Adam Driver. He was great in this movie. It's the most non-Adam Driver Adam Driver I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm aligned with you, Rashmi. I mean, I think Green Book had a bigger place in my heart than I think it did yours. So I felt that both Mahershala Ali and Viggo Mortensen, I should have mentioned this in the actor category, but the two of them, I think, elevated what was a little bit of a pokey script to something special. And I felt very strongly that it was the chemistry between the two of them that made the movie. So, you know, when you talk about the craft of acting, one of the things that, you know, good actors can do is elevate the material that they're given. And I felt very much that these two did that in The Green Book. That's kind of what I'll say about that. The others, whatever. Sam Elliott, he said it. Richard E. Grant, yeah. And, you know, Vice, okay, yeah. He was a convincing W, you know, but not a great. I mean, you know, we saw the Josh Brolin did a really great George Bush not that long ago in the Oliver Stone movie W. So
I bet he's kicking himself now. Just kidding.
And I bet, Sam Rockwell just won last year for Three Billboards. So do we want to give him like two back-to-back? I don't know.
I feel like that's lazy nominating.
Is it such a game?
Yes. I feel like it's lazy nominating.
It was lazy nominating. I think it is lazy nominating.
Actress, supporting actress. So Amy Adams, Vice. Marina de Tavira for Roma. I hope they said that right. Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk. Emma Stone in The Favourite. Rachel Weisz for The Favourite.
Well, of course, I'm ecstatic that both Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone got nominated.
Pick one.
I would say Emma Stone because she had to do a British accent as well as act. That's the small edge. Regina King is truly wonderful in If Beale Street Could Talk. I mean, because I wouldn't want to choose between Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz, I wouldn't be unhappy if Regina King gets it. Marina de Tavira Yazdi, earlier in the show, you were talking about what a left field this was. Yeah. Not non-deserving.
No, not
but, you know, again, I wish Thomasin McKenzie from Leave No Trace had maybe been nominated here. And then Amy Adams, she's really good in this movie. I just don't like Amy Adams. That's not a good reason not to give it to her.
I don't think she's that good in this movie. I think she doesn't have a lot to do in this movie. But yeah.
She's been better. I mean, even if we look back a year and take something like the sci-fi movie, the big Arrival movie, you know, far more to kind of get from her as an actor from that movie than there was.
I feel bad for her because, again, this is her fifth or sixth nomination, and you know she gets no love, but yeah, not for this one for me. The good folks at the Film Experience, always they've coined this term called category fraud, and both Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz really are leads, along with Olivia Colman. I mean, that was a great big dilemma with this movie. They're really three leads, but you know, I understand why you don't want to put three women there, because they'll eat up each other's votes and then nobody wins. So Rachel Weisz has been picking up the awards in favor of Emma Stone, which surprises me. I'm torn. They're both equal. And I do have a soft spot for Emma Stone. So, yeah, I would pick Emma Stone as well. But for me, the true fight in this is between Regina King and Emma Stone. Regina King brings so much elegance and so much
heart, restraint
and heart. Yes. And you feel the heaviness of a woman trying to do good by her son.
Yes.
And she just conveys that so beautifully. Yes. So I hope she gets it. And Emma Stone has won Best Actress recently, too. Not that that should matter.
I think we have two more categories.
Okay.
Director.
So directing, we have Black Klansman, Cold War, The Favourite, Roma and Vice.
All very, very, very worthy, deserving nominations here. The one I can't quite get behind, I think, is Cold War, because I didn't enjoy the movie.
Really?
Yeah. So it's the one I really wanted Joe to watch, because it's in Polish.
Right.
I just wanted to slap the main protagonist the entire time.
It reminded but I me understand. Of the Broken Circle, whatever.
Yeah,
remember?
It was kind of like yeah. Broken Circle. No, but Broken Circle Breakdown was much, much more superior. But I understand why it's being nominated, because I think it's well filmed, and I kind of find myself thinking if it wasn't in black and white, it wouldn't be on the list. I think.
Plus, whereas, it's epic. It covers over, you know, decades.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. But everyone else is very deserving here, I think. I mean, the one that's missing, if I had to really name one that was missing.
Lanthimos.
No, I was going to say First Reformed.
Oh, yeah. Paul Schrader.
It's directed with so much tension and those overhead shots and just the enormity of the material that's covered and how it's covered. I really wish First Reformed had got more love. But good news, it has been recognized by the Spirit Awards.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Schrader, I mean, he was the co-writer for Taxi Driver, for Martin Scorsese, wow. Like way back in the 70s. This is a person who's been making movies for decades, and he deserves some respect. So my thing is, I really hope that, you know, Oscar night will bring history with Roma winning Best Picture and being the first foreign film to win Best Picture. But then I hope it doesn't.
And cinematography,
and
which I
best
think
director,
it's got a good
and best foreign
for.
Film. So this is my problem, right? I hope it doesn't sweep everything. I hope that, you know, that we share the wealth. So it would be a shame if it won Best Picture, which I don't begrudge it, and Best Director. And Alfonso Cuarón already has a director's trophy for Gravity. And Best Cinematography and Best Foreign Film. Because then, you know, in a year this rich with so many movies, it would be a shame
sure.
if it took all these prizes.
Sure.
So
it's
just
a good
hope,
point.
I just hope, you know, it's not that clean sweep.
Don't be lazy voters.
Yes, don't be lazy. You're voting
Dear
right
Academy
now.
Dear Academy members, do
okay.
not
yes.
be lazy voters.
Time out.
Yes.
Achievement in directing.
Yes.
Right? Roma is a movie that is pure direction. I mean, it's direction, cinematography, acting and writing and all of that stuff. But without Cuarón at the helm, I don't know that this movie would have been what it is. And this movie is so subtly... So I'm a huge fan of it, obviously. We've talked about that already on the podcast. But when we're looking at achievement in directing, I don't know that I would be unhappy to see him win this category
yeah,
as well.
I
agree with
Yazdi's
point.
Yeah,
I think
he's just saying
best foreign film and best film would be a problem for me.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that's
It's greedy.
You know, and so hopefully they don't vote that way. My only comment on this category is why isn't Krasinski here?
Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
Again, when we're talking
You're
about
right.
achievement in directing, you know, the script for A Quiet Place is probably 2 pages long.
Leave
No Trace as well. Yeah, no, that's also, you know,
brilliant directing.
Or
but
you know,
back to Krasinski,
or,
like
yeah.
A Quiet Place, literally,
so
is
it,
there's no dialogue
it,
in it.
Clicks so well into each other. It's so beautifully laid out.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I agree.
So,
I agree. What's the last category?
We could do either documentary or animation. You pick one.
Well, why don't we do both?
Oh,
I mean,
why
animated.
Don't we? I was
real,
hoping someone would say that.
Just real quick. I mean, I haven't watched everything on the animated feature list, I think, as
I
look
I
at
haven't
it.
Watched
Spider-Man
Mirai.
Into the Spider-Verse, to me, seems very, very hard to beat. I was not a fan of this year's Wes Anderson entry, The Isle of Dogs. In fact, I'm not quite sure what it's doing here. And again, of the others, I haven't seen Mirai. And Ralph Breaks the Internet, so I'm a little bit unprepared to discuss this category. But Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is exceptional. And it was pretty close to a Best Film nomination in my books, never mind just Best Animated Feature.
I think it takes the craft of animation mm-hmm. in a different futuristic direction that we haven't seen before.
It's new,
and much
yeah.
as I like, I think Wes Anderson tried to do something different with Isle of Dogs, which is why I think it's here. It's not new in the way that it's constructed. So I think in terms of the craft, of animation and how adult it can be. If it had come from an unknown
director, it wouldn't be anywhere near this list. It's just because he's a brand name at this point.
Correct.
I agree, and considering that it came out of nowhere, and it really is in a whole other dimension, you know, sorry for the bad pun, but it's like 4D, you know, it's like the texture of the movie, the visual texture of the movie, the script, how it incorporates, you know, different things from different places. So I think it's in a whole other dimension. So for me, it's a very easy choice. It should be Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And I'd be very surprised if that didn't prevail.
So given we are all lovers of documentary on Movie Wallahs and we are avid documentary watchers, I'm embarrassed to say I've only seen 2 out of the 5 here.
Mm-hmm.
And
as have I, yeah.
And that's shocking given how many we watch. I'm really sad to see. I think we've mentioned them before. Won't You Be My Neighbor? Three Solos Here.
Yeah.
There's a lot missing. There's a lot missing this year.
I think what happens is, you know, the documentary nominations can be made only by the documentary people. So, and likewise, the directors can only put the nominations for director for that particular category. So hopefully those people who are watching documentaries have seen more than we have. And I don't even know how I can get my hands on Of Fathers and Sons. I don't know anything about it. Well, we can
tell
it.
You.
Tell us.
It's available on?
You have to rent it on iTunes.
Oh, okay.
So because we looked it up. We saw the director at the Film Independent event the other night. So, it is available.
Okay.
You've got to pay you $4.99 to rent it, but I think that's probably a good use of $4.99 based on what I know about the movie today.
Yeah, it's one that I definitely want to watch. It sounds very interesting. It's kind of a almost like a fly on the wall inside ISIS. And this guy basically put his life in danger to film the movie.
I
don't
want to see that. Okay.
I don't think any of them are uplifting. These are...
Well, no. Free Solo.
I guess Free Solo, yeah. RBG. Yeah.
With that said, I mean, you know, all of that said, I would not be unhappy to see Free Solo win. RBG would be disappointing for me to win because I feel like whatever you feel about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, this movie failed to
provide more insight. Give us that sense
for who and how and what she went through. And I think a far better portrayal of Ginsburg was achieved in On the Basis of Sex, which was the movie starring Felicity Jones.
Yep, and Armie Hammer.
And Armie Hammer that came out this year, which was a narrative
version
of the RBG story. Told us way more about the character than I thought RBG did. But
really...
Free Solo is something that I would be very, very delighted to see. Because, again, when you look at what it took to make the film, the risks that they took, the level of technical know-how and effort that they had to go to, you know, set this story up, I think that's remarkable.
The one I'm really disappointed didn't make the list and it didn't really gain much momentum this year was McQueen, about the designer, Alexander McQueen. That's definitely in my top 20. Really good documentary, and there were quite a few about the fashion world and fashion designers this year and last year. In fact, I think one of the ones about, I can't remember his name now, I'm blanking, was one of the nominations from last year. McQueen was a superior fashion documentary for me because it really went behind the scenes of not just the fashion world, but of him as a man. Mm. And, you know, he committed suicide at such a young age with so much promise. So I'm really sad that's not here.
Mm. The usual story.
Yep. So that brings us to the end of our top three, all our top movies of 2018, and our take on Oscars.
I think it's been a very good year for movies.
Been a great year.
Again, I feel like one of the things I enjoyed about this year was that not everything came out at the last minute. So, you know... A lot of it did. It's the usual Oscar, you know, award season shenanigans that we see from the studios. But, you know, some of my favourite films,
A Quiet Place
came out much earlier on. Leave No Trace, I guess. Well, that was snubbed here, but so yeah, 2018 not so bad.
I hope 2019 is as fruitful.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, we've rambled on for long enough. So again, thank you if you've made it to this far in the podcast. Thank you for your listening. I will try and get this podcast out before the Oscars, before it loses any kind of relevance at all. So again, you know, if you have any thoughts on what you're hearing from us or anything else that you thought should have been on the list, or anything, do interact with us. Mail at moviewallows.com, facebook.com/moviewallows, instagram.com/moviewallows, everything.com/moviewallows. Until next time, too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.